Great Grand. Oh, whoa, Mother Nature's very delight. You can't make cream of butter, cause it's just a human udder, a natural mammalian sight. Do you wanna pay to take a peek at what drives men insane? Well, they're in anthro books galore, and I'm too sure that you'll adore them. Cave women have the same two simple mammary glands. Whoa, whoa, Mother Nature's very delight. You can't make cream of butter, cause it's just a human udder, a natural mammalian sight. The men decided that a certain shape stands out more than the rest. Well, they made such a major issue, women thought their balls were tissue. Their shoulders back and look their best, show off their mammary glands. Whoa, whoa, Mother Nature's very delight. You can't make cream of butter, cause it's just a human udder, a natural mammalian desirable. So don't be shy, they'll pay. For once you finally saw that, you may get a centerfold up if you could dodge your life away with famous mammary glands. Whoa, whoa, Mother Nature's very delight. You can't make cream of butter, cause it's just a human udder, a natural mammalian sight. It's a multi-million-dollar enterprise, but no one knows what it's about. If we think before we buy, we bust the myth, we want to buy it, we might stand up and shout, they're only mammary glands. Whoa, whoa, Mother Nature's very delight. You can't make cream of butter, cause it's just a human odor, a natural mammalian sight, a natural mammalian sight.
It's about 5:25. I'm here with Edward DeBolt, who we talked to earlier, several months back. I guess you were in jail at that time for trying to get in touch with your probation officer rather than not trying. And it was an interesting, you had an interesting story around that. But now you've come to us with information about four citations you received, four tickets from the police. And unfortunately, we just went through all this on a tape that didn't record, and so I hate to have to ask you to run it all again. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to summarize it, and I'd like you to tell me if I mistake or perhaps leave out some details. You talked about a ticket last Sunday at the Elm Street Mission, Elm Street being, of course, a location where homeless people, hungry people over the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, get meals, get food. Apparently, you had a conflict of opinion with Larry, what's his name?
Palmer, who's the main executor, the pastor.
And you were concerned that, well, you were seeking some kind of lodging, is that the thing?
That's true. I was living in Corralitos, and my roommate decided not to pay the rent, so we had to move out.
Mm-hmm. So you were looking for some emergency shelter?
That's true.
And he said that he couldn't help you because he felt you had an anger problem. Had you had an angry interchange with him in the past, or was he simply upset with your demeanor on that Sunday a week ago when you went to him?
No, I've not had a problem with him. But I've had a problem with some of the people that live there.
And, well, do you think, would it have been reasonable for him to be concerned about you having angry interchanges with him? I mean, if you're looking at the situation from a distance objectively, would you have seen any merit in his position? And were there two sides to that question?
I believe there was two sides, but, you know, I continuously volunteer there. I do as much as I can. I spend more time helping them. I help the people inside the mission.
What kind of work do you do? What kind of volunteer work?
I cook the Friday, Saturday, Sunday meals. I clean up the meals. I do the coffee house, which is a free coffee house from kids to 25 and under.
When is that coffee house?
Fridays and Saturdays from 8 p.m. until midnight.
You're open to everybody? Or?
It's open from for
younger kids.
From 25 and under.
So I probably wouldn't get in without a toupee.
Exactly.
So you've been actually doing some work there, and so you asked Larry about some assistance, say, in return, and his response was?
No. And then we started arguing, you know, why not? And he told me I have an anger problem, and I told him, well, you got druggies, you got heroin addicts, crack addicts, drunks, and wing nuts in there. And you don't have a problem with them. They can go out and do crack, be kicked out for a night, and then come back and everything's all sane.
And so, of course, the difference between those groups and you, it might be said, is behavior on the property. I mean, if somebody is a drug abuser, but doesn't, should we say, abuse people on the property, one might say that the real issue is not their drug use or abuse, but how they act in the situation. Did you assure him that your behavior on the property, however angry you may be about this or that, would not be a problem? Or?
Yes, I did.
Do you think that's an accurate self-perception, or do you think that's problematic?
I think that, you know, if he would give me a chance, I could change. But what he told me was, you know, people do drugs and they change. But see, I was doing drugs and I stopped it overnight, literally overnight. One day I was doing it, one day I just stopped.
How long ago was that?
10 months and 30 days ago.
So the ultimate outcome of this conversation was that he told you to leave the property?
Yes, it was.
And what did you do?
I left, walked away. About an hour later, I was walking by, and the guy asked me for a cigarette, and I reach in my pocket, I grab a cigarette, I reach over the fence to give it to him, and Larry Palmer comes out and says, I'm calling the police, and walks away and calls the police.
And what did the police do?
They told me, they came and they told me, you know, I should have left, and I told him I'm not going to run away from the police. Like when he told me, you know, Larry Palmer told me to leave, I mean to, you know, he was going to call the police told me I should have left. And I told him I'm not going to run from the police, that's the wrong thing to do.
What did they say to that?
That's correct, you know, don't run. He kind of contradicted what he said at first, but then he gave me a ticket for trespassing.
And that wasn't the only ticket you got from the Elm Street Mission. Several days later, what happened?
I went over and tried to get some money that a guy owed me, $50, and I knocked on the door. I walked up the steps and knocked on the door, and he came to the door and called the police again.
So your intention in that situation was not to trespass, but simply to make contact with the person you needed to reach?
That's correct.
And you said that, I guess, then you waited for the police and got a ticket from the same officers or a new set of officers?
A new set of officers.
What did they tell you?
They gave me a ticket, that's all.
Now, I guess you mentioned to me before that in the first ticketing occasion, the police not only told you that you couldn't be on the Elm Street property, they also told you that you were banned from public sidewalk near the Elm Street property?
Yeah, forever.
Did they show you a court order?
No.
Did they cite a law stating what their reasoning was?
No.
Did they indicate in some way that any legal justification for what they were telling you?
No.
And in other words, they simply sort of directed you with no justification to leave a public area?
That's correct.
And has your response been not to go back to that public area?
I went back today.
And what was the consequence of that?
I walked up to Larry Palmer and shook his hand.
And what did Larry say?
Nothing.
Does he say he's going to drop these silly charges?
No.
You think he will?
No.
Was he still angry with you?
No.
Why wouldn't he drop the charges if he was, you know, if he got you guys have made up?
Because he's the kind of man that'll just, you know, carry out with what he's already started.
Well, then there were apparently two other tickets you got. One was in the Capitola Mall in Mervyn's when you were accused of stealing shirts. Want to tell us about that?
I went to the Capitola Mall and I bought a watch, and I went to the dressing room and tried on a couple shirts, and I put the shirts all on the same hanger, because the other two hangers that were broke, they're the kind with metal clips on them, the clips are broke, so I just stuck them on, you know, one hanger. And so when I walked out, I put them on the shelf where I got it, which was right next to the dressing room. And then I walked out all the way through the mall, past the security guard that would later, you know, grab me. I went to the bus. The buses were all there. And they said, they came out, I was smoking a cigarette. The buses had already left. I, you know, had nothing to worry about because I didn't take anything. It came up, and one lady was plainclothes with a purse and a pager on it, and a security guard came with her. His name is John. He used to work at the Metro, but he got fired because he didn't work. He just talked to the girls all the time. And so they took me back to Mervyn's into some little office and did an interrogation with me, asked me all these questions, and then they, you know, the lady left, and the security guard was there to search me. He searched me.
With your consent or without?
With my consent, but, you know, he said it had to be done. I had to take off all my clothes, and looked at me, told me to stick my clothes back on. The lady came back in, she asked more questions. She asked me, what did I do with the clothes? And I told her I stuck them back on the rack. So she took me out, we walked back to the rack, the shirts were there, she left them there. We walked back, she did more interrogation work on me. Then the guy, the security guard left, he told her when the cops come, give him a case number. She called the cops came, they gave me a ticket, she called the security guard again. And then, after the cops left, and he gave me a piece of paper saying I'm banned from the mall for 6 months, and that's it.
So, did you tell the police officer before he wrote the ticket that, in fact, you had taken nothing and that the security officer, at least the female employee, plainclothes woman, had confirmed the fact that the shirts were still in the store?
Yeah, but they said, we're not here to prove your innocence. You need to prove your innocence in court.
Actually, they have to prove you're guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Did he use the words prove you're innocent, or is that your phrase?
That's what they told me.
Are they using the actual phrase, prove your innocence?
I have to prove my own innocence, yeah.
That's what they said?
Yes.
Remember the name of the Capitola police officer who said that?
John.
Last name?
I don't know his last name.
Probably on the ticket. So then there was a fourth ticket you got. Apparently, you've been causing terror all over the area. This was in the Metro, right?
That's correct.
And what was that about?
I was smoking a cigarette, and they really try to crack down on people smoking on the Metro property. Well, I wasn't on the Metro property. I was on public ground, and that's right in front of there's this smoking ashtray, right? But why do they have an ashtray there if you can't smoke there? And I was smoking there. The security calls the cops, and then, you know, they come over and they harass me and they give me a ticket for loitering.
For loitering?
Loitering.
Trespass or loitering?
Loitering.
They said loitering.
Mm-hmm.
Loitering with intent to smoke?
No. Mm-hmm.
And that was Edward DeBolt on May 30th talking about three tickets he received, which again sound a lot like harassment. Again, we're just hearing his account of the tickets, and that has to be taken into consideration, but where else are you going to hear his account except on a station like this? So look at it that way. Have you been harassed by police on bogus charges for tickets that actually had more to do with your appearance or some sort of arbitrary officer activity, apparently with less to do than, after all, we do have lots of cops in town now, and lots of money for the new police station, and some spare time for these police officers. If you've been harassed, give us a call here on air if you want to talk about it on air at 427-3772. Or if, on the other hand, you feel the police are doing a good job and you want to commend them and you want to support them and you want to counter some of what you may regard as a one-sided barrage of information coming out, well, I'll see who's calling in here.
Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Okay, great. Hello, Santa Cruz. I want to talk about a bit of police harassment that most people probably aren't thinking about. I live right behind where the new police station is being built, and it has been, let's say almost 2 years in construction now. It's only like a two-story building. I don't know why it's taking them so long to do it. And there's constant noise. They haven't followed the common noise ordinance laws of not starting work before 8 o'clock. They were over here at 6:30 some mornings, drilling on metal, just waking up the whole neighborhood, complete disregard for the community. Now that this thing is almost completely built, it's like floodlit, I don't even know what. I come home and it's like I can read a book in the middle of the night in my house because of the lights that are coming off of this building,
mm-hmm.
completely beaming in the community.
You know, contacted the city council to complain about this?
Yeah, I'm waiting until the whole thing's set up and I see how many lights they actually leave on.
Mm-hmm. Because I think even at this point, you can point out that, you know, it's a matter of concern to you. I mean, if you don't want to be, you know, you're a working person who needs your sleep and or just an ordinary individual who wants to enjoy the peaceful use of his property, you have a right to call city council at 420-5020, and you can actually do that right now. You don't have to wait till Monday, 420-5020, and leave a message for Mayor Byers and say, Mayor Byers, I'm concerned about this, and I'd like you to look into it and call me back on Monday morning and let me know what you think. I suggest they're going to probably stonewall you, but I think that if the calls start to come in, then in some way they'll have to start addressing the issue.
Yeah, that's great. I didn't have that number before. Thanks a lot.
Yay, thank you.
All right, keep on with the show.
Is there anything more you want to add?
No, that's about it, but thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
All right, bye-bye.
That's what this station is all about, hopefully facilitating your opportunity to do something with real concerns and instead of just sitting at home and wondering what to do next.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi. As a suggestion, maybe that person ought to take a rock and take that light out since it's his tax dollars at work.
Direct
just
action.
Just as a suggestion. Yeah, a little direct action there.
I see. Well, I'm sure that the caller is probably listening to the radio. And, I don't want to comment on that suggestion. But have you had any problems yourself, caller, with police contacts in the last few weeks?
Well, just bringing up what that last caller did, $13 million of our tax fucking dollars to build a new war machine for the police state with an indoor shooting range. It's just obnoxious, you know. Of course, it's Y2 compliant.
Yeah, that's true.
And they should be moved in before the Y2K problem will happen, so they'll be all ready to have martial law here on the streets of Santa Cruz.
Well, I can think of some really good uses for the police station. And when it opens up on, I guess it's June 25th, you know what the date of the opening is?
I'll be there.
I think it was June 25th, but I'm not sure. There's a suggestion that since the Homeless Services Center's Interfaith Satellite Shelter Emergency Shelter Program has to throw out, well, it was throwing out 6 to 7 people a night about a week ago, and I think they had some more spaces for a while, but now they don't again. That, you know, the police lobby might be an excellent place for people with sleeping bags to kind of assemble to show the police, maybe give the police an opportunity to show off their lodging skills.
Yeah, that's nice.
That'll be on the day the police department officially opens, I think June 25th, but again, we're looking for an exact date. If anybody knows that, please call in.
They'll probably let a lot of homeless people sleep in the shooting range, maybe.
Well, you know, DeCenzo has shown that, I think we could put up, you know, have DeCenzo on one end and him on the other. DeCenzo is a
car. Hey, homeless people, you can sleep here, just move around, do some exercise, and you could be our moving targets.
We could have Lee Kornstrom and DeCenzo covering, you know, the shooting gallery and how many homeless get away, special prizes for agile homeless people and sharpshooting officers.
Right, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I just wanted to make that little comment.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And let's have some more little comments. That's what we need. Your lines are open, 427-3772.
Free
Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, not to dog a point. This is the guy who lives right behind the police station. You know, the rock throwing is a good suggestion, but there's also surveillance cameras on the back of the building. So I don't really want to, you know, get busted for trying to get a good night's sleep. But it's an excellent excellent suggestion there. Thank you. And then, you know, I was thinking about the shooting gallery. This is supposed to be like a community center building. Are us civilians going to be able to use that shooting gallery to maybe practice our shooting? I kind of doubt it.
Make it a fair fight, that sort of thing?
Yeah, you know. What's good for the goose, right?
All right.
NRA, right to bear arms. Anyway, thanks a lot for the time.
Sure. Well, I was a bit concerned about the amount of the millions of dollars that went into this police station, even considering some of the components. I think there was $35,000 to $50,000 for some preposterous sculpture at the fountain, when, as we know, people are getting beaten up at night because there's no emergency campground. And I figure $50,000 to $100,000 could fund an emergency campground to take care of about 100 people, put in some barbecue pits, put in some campsites out at Harvey West, or possibly in one acre of the precious Pogonip, which seems to be, you know, being kept, supposedly being kept pristine, but actually, of course, it's getting trashed big time because there is no organized effort to provide areas where homeless people can camp safely, legally, and cleanly. So instead, people are, you know, dumping their shit where they want. And I was presented by Patricia Matichek, the Beach Area Working Group, angrily showed me photos from the Parks and Rec Department of trashed campsites in the Pogonip, which I guess Jim Lang brought to the task force to enforce, to examine the camping ordinance to show how messy these campers are and how bad they are and so forth and what a problem they are. Again, when an activity is criminal, you get, I think, people less concerned with basic social norms. If everything is criminal, then everything is allowed. I mean, it's sort of a reality. And I think the way to deal with this is to look for some real safe places to sleep. Not look for some. Take the ones we have and use them. And if the city council won't use them, then the homeless community and those of you out there who have homes who are willing to stand with the homeless community just have to go down, lay out your sleeping bags, and deal with the issue in terms of civil disobedience until such time as city council comes to its senses and starts behaving fairly towards people. You either decriminalize sleeping in some areas, or you set up a campground where it's legal and car parks where it's legal, or you stop arresting people or ticketing people or putting people in fear of arrest and tickets for sleeping or covering up with blankets, which of course is our city law. Sleep after 11 o'clock at night or cover up with blankets, get a $54 ticket, which rapidly escalates if you don't show up at court to pay it or deal with the legal process, which is not the easiest thing to do when you're a homeless person. Half of those tickets traditionally go to warrant, and that means that you have to start dodging the police. And if you're a homeless woman, you can't report assaults without the apprehension that the police are going to get on your ass. Now, the reality here is confused because some police officers, Sergeant Baker, for instance, claim that, you know, we're going to work things out if there's a problem. If you are assaulted, don't be afraid to come to the police and tell them that you've been assaulted. And I'm not saying that Baker is lying in this situation. I've accused him of such things in the past regarding the 10 women who came forward and complained that he had molested them or harassed them or improperly touched them back in the early 90s when he was a special case before the actual city council did an investigation of then-Officer Baker, or started to before it backed down. And Baker was given the DA, State Attorney General's IA, and I think maybe even a grand jury certificate of approval. But that didn't persuade me that these women were lying. I'm afraid that I never quite believed Sergeant Baker on this issue, and much as I feel his conduct may have changed since then, I think that what we have to consider, again, is this issue of sleeping. And Baker has said, well, you know, we will try to find you a way to work out your warrants. If you have an assault against you, don't worry about that, to come in to report it. And I believe he's probably speaking sincerely. But on the other hand, on the same panel that we heard talking about this issue, there were three cops, Sergeant Baker, Sergeant Clark, and Officer Seeley, out at the Homeless Services Center about two weeks ago. Sergeant Clark was kind of taking a harder line, saying, well, you got to deal with your tickets, you know, you got to deal with these things. We can't give you immunity. And there seems to be some kind of division, you know, and it's kind of hard for people to have any sense of confidence about what the police department is and isn't going to do in terms of arresting homeless people. So I'm going to play I'll give you an example of this conversation. We're going to play a bit of the Homeless Services Center discussion that happened about 2 weeks ago when Sergeant Baker, Sergeant Clark, and Officer Seeley showed up at the direction, or I should say at the invitation, of Homeless Services Center Director Ken Cole, who took over Karen Gillette's position. And we'll hear this, you'll hear for yourself the kind of, the kinds of responses the police department is making. They were talking about, you know, they were imminently about to make arrests in the case of Joe Barker, who was beaten so badly he was hospitalized by, he estimated 4 to 6 youths, dressed in black, shouting, "Police, get up," kicking him with boots, hitting him with clubs and pipes. And they know who these people are, but they haven't yet made any arrests. I continue to wonder if this would happen in a middle-class case. I'm continuing to be told, well, you want to make sure that people don't slip through the, you know, have a clever criminal defense lawyer and get away, but I remain skeptical, I got to tell you. Let's hear a little bit from the police and the homeless community talking back to the police about 2 weeks ago.
Is there a specific place that people are locked in centers? There is no specific place, according to Santa Cruz Municipal Code, that they can sleep out with. Now, I will let you know that, I work this area a lot. I know a lot of people and what they do and where they are. And that is always in the present of my mind, that I'm going to try to remember that and keep them as safe as I can. So, in that respect, if you want to tell me where you are and give me some times, I'll make sure that you're well taken care of, that someone will always be there accessible for you. Because I know a lot of times you just can't pick up the phone like you can in the house.
Right.
So, we can always get ways of helping out.
Okay, Patty, and then
my name is Patty Long. I've been working as a volunteer with the homeless for 15 years in Santa Cruz. But I want to commend the Santa Cruz Police Department for making these incidents a top priority, because I speak to a lot of the homeless, and this morning I hired a homeless guy to work for me, and he said he knows of 6 camps of homeless that are arming themselves to the teeth, and they're just waiting for some of these quote-unquote skinheads. Whether they are skinheads or not, I don't know, because they come in the dark and it's hard to see who's doing the attacking. I would hate to see that kind of escalation and confrontation take place, because a lot of innocent people will be hurt. So my other comment is, it highlights the need for a permanent place for the homeless, that ISSP does the best it can, but it's not enough. I know that because I was one of the founders of ISSP back in 85. And I lived with the homeless, 65 homeless people at night. There are some bays here that could be transformed rather easily, rather inexpensively. And there's a building right across the street in back of Bear Service called the Taggart Building. It's for sale. I'd love to see the city buy it, or the county or the state use it for the homeless. I don't know how the merchants around here would feel about a permanent place, but everyone has that not in my backyard syndrome. At least it would be worthwhile looking into it. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Ted. I think Blue is next, and then we'll get around to others as well. I've got a two-part question. One, you said the attacks, the assaults come from your desk, all of us, right?
Everyone.
All right, could you tell me what has happened, or what the situation is with the beating that Smokey Joe Beats took the day after St. Patrick's Day?
Talking about Joe Barker.
You know, I don't know. Like I said, every single report that's written in the police department comes across my desk.
Sergeant
I
Clark
probably
speaking.
Review about 50 reports a day.
I see you for 10 or 12 days.
I understand it, but off the top of my head, you want me to remember that case? I can't. I can't tell you what's happened with that case. If you want to contact me later, I can probably answer that for you.
I'll give you a card.
I appreciate it.
Two-part question.
And that was Lou Rice, the man who did the 27-day hunger strike, asking Sergeant Clark what happened in the beating of Joe Barker. And it's interesting that Clark wouldn't have any updates on that, since he was specifically called to talk about homeless beatings, and Barker at that time was one of only three reported beatings. The first reported beating, Larry Cessna, Sergeant Clark also had no information on. That was a man who was beaten in January, actually came and spoke to the mayor and the city council about the issue, as well as the task force to examine the camping ordinance when it went out to the homeless services center. So the police department and the person of Sergeant Clark just doesn't seem to be too up on this. And Lou Rice, saw him yesterday at a homeless meeting at the homeless services center, a HUF meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And he seemed to, well, we were all very concerned that really not much was getting done. I was concerned anyway, and there doesn't seem to be any arrests. There doesn't seem to be any action to take to establish a safe zone. I talked to Tim Fitzmaurice yesterday, Councilmember Fitzmaurice. He had no indication that he was going to introduce anything like a safe zone or a safe area. Similarly, Catherine Byers has not returned my calls on this. Usually she's pretty good at returning calls. I don't like what she says when she does, but she usually does return calls. You heard Councilmember Rotkin dodge and weave and run all over the map looking away on this issue. So it's not looking good on this issue, and I think that it's going to have to be people like you and me and the rest of the community that bring this issue to the public attention through downtown protests, through an occupation of some property out at the beach flats, through an occupation of the police station, through dramatic public means, peaceful, strong, solid means that bring the issue to the public attention. I mean, the reason Representative Farr held a community meeting when he did and where he did around the issue of the bombing was because a number of us stood up and essentially went to jail and sat in his office and risked 6 months in jail a pop and on trespassing charges that at least one set of the charges have been dropped, and we're still waiting for the second set to be or dropped or not filed, and we'll find out if that happens at the end of the month. We assume that those charges are going to be dropped, but there are still five people who are standing up and facing charges, including Steve Argue, on the issue of police abuse of protesters noisily but peacefully protesting the bombing. But it was people standing up that accomplished what I think was significant, that Farr had to come back to his community and talk to them, even though he didn't have anything to say, and his 72-hour bombing pause proposal was a ceasefire. I mean, it was a joke in the view of many of us. And of course, the whole issue has been put on the back burner now that the bombing has stopped and the troops have moved in. But I would submit to you, and I think this is really the subject for discussion for those who want to talk about this either now or at a future show, that rewarding aggressors does not help. And in my mind, the NATO bombing of Yugoslavia, the one would almost say indiscriminate, but certainly it's the bombing that targeted civilian infrastructure, calling, you know, going to make the Serb people suffer because Milosevic isn't agreeing to the deal to let UN troops or European troops throughout the country, which was the Rambouillet Accords, is just grotesque, considering the 19 NATO nations arrayed against Yugoslavia. This is no way to justify Milosevic's Serbian nationalism and the atrocities that happened in his civil war against the Albanian KLA and his abusive treatment of the Albanian minority in Kosovo, or his actions during, you know, the war, the Bosnian scene either. I'm not going to get into that, but protest has an effect, and I was really sorry that there wasn't more direct protest against the bombing, against this big stick diplomacy that Clinton is now using. I think that we need protest against the big stick diplomacy that is in place in Santa Cruz, although it may have a velvet covering to it. Well, you may not have heard of a lot of sleeping tickets lately. They are beginning to start coming back as the tourist season mounts, and the beatings are happening. homeless people are getting beaten up. They can't sleep in safe groups. They can't sleep in well-lit places. They can't sleep safely at night because people like Tim Fitzmaurice and Catherine Byers have decided that they're not willing to stand up for human rights. People like Mike Rotkin and Cynthia Matthews and Michael Hernandez, all council members, will not vote to make it legal for people to sleep somewhere. And this is something we have to do. Call the city council, 420-5020. Tell them this troll-busting situation is a crisis that has to be dealt with, and has to be dealt with now. Not next year, not in 10 years, not if and when somebody presents a nice proposal, as Mike Rotkin has said. He's always waiting for proposals, the eternally waiting guy. But it has to be dealt with now. I got a couple of announcements I'm going to make, and then I'm inviting a poet to call in. It's a woman who has written some poetry about homeless issues and homeless people. She herself has been homeless. Perhaps she'll want to talk about that, perhaps not. And do remember, the call-in number here is 427-3772. Announcement-wise, here's a few upcoming events. Tomorrow, Monday, today, even as we speak, in about 20 minutes, the Streetwise Street Fair starts, and that's going to be at Laurel Park, right near Loudon Nelson Center, at Center and Laurel Streets, and it's going to be street musicians from Santa Cruz all day playing street music in this fair situation. I'm going to set up a huff table over there, I think, and bring out my literature and stuff, and so I've got street spirits you can sell or you can buy. If you're a homeless person, sell them. If you're not a homeless person, buy them. Read them if you're either. That's today from 1 to 7, Streetwise. Then tomorrow, Monday, June 14th, at 706 Frederick, there'll be a meeting of the Coalition to Stop the Bombing. There's some confusion whether it's 3:30 or 4 o'clock. Of course, the bombing has stopped, but I guess we're going to talk about where do we go from here. Is this enough for us? Is this it? Or do we want to express broader concerns about U.S. foreign policy? That's at 706 Frederick Street. Where do we go from here in the issue of Yugoslavia? At 5 o'clock, at Java Junction, the supervisor, Marty Wormhout, who's the supervisor for the Santa Cruz District, has her agenda meeting, which she tells people what's going to be on the agenda, takes your input. If you want to tell Marty Wormhout that it's not appropriate that the county should criminalize people for sleeping, and they do that too. We had thought that there was some sort of breathing room there for people sleeping in their vehicles or sleeping on public property, but there isn't. The latest interpretation of the county council is that if you sleep in your vehicle, unless you're a motorist going through that and doing some emergency roadside resting, then it is not legal to do it, nor is it legal to sleep on virtually any county property. You can't sleep in the parks, you can't sleep in the parking lots, you can't sleep on the roadways, roadsides, or rights of way. So theoretically you could find some undeveloped county property, but when we asked Andy Schifrin to find that a decade ago, though he seems to have no problem pushing Dolphin Lee to the max, this proposal in the beach flats, he had lots of problems finding a piece of undeveloped property where a homeless person could fall asleep legally, even though that shouldn't be such a problem if you want to at least give straight information to the public. Then at 5:30 on Monday, June 14th, the Citizens Police Review Board is meeting. That is going to be considering taking initial testimony into the case of Steve Argue, not as a public hearing, but just just to open up the issue and to consider actually having a public hearing. I invite you all to come to that. If you want to deal with this case of a man who was beaten with truncheons, pepper sprayed in the mouth and in the eyes in an illegal fashion by Officer Lefevre, and is now facing charges of assault on an officer and is out on $20,000 bail. That's at 5:30 at City Hall, downtown, 809 Center Street, Monday, Citizens Police Review Board. Then on Tuesday, 9 a.m., Board of Supervisors meets, fifth floor of the county building. Go there if you're interested in speaking out on the issues of homelessness in the county or how the deputies are treating people in the county or anything concerning the county. 9 a.m., Board of Supervisors, fifth floor of the county building at 701 Ocean Street. Then from 10 to 6 on Tuesday, there's going to be a special nonviolence training. That's at 125 Sunnyside. 10 a.m. to 6, 125 Sunnyside, nonviolence training. And that's going to be I'm going to read you the blurb on it. It's a nonviolent civil disobedience training at the Sunnyside House off of Branca Forte between Water and Soquel. Please come if you can. The training will consist of 2 4-hour segments with lunch in between. If there are any Food Not Bombs people on this list who would like to help out with catering, we'd appreciate it. The training is free, but we're asking for donations to reimburse the trainers for traveling expenses. Thanks. For those of you who did not get the initial inquiry about possible times of the training, here's some more information. If you have any questions, you can leave a message at 427-5566 or email santacruz@barry.iww.org. Barry, B-A-R-I, dot I-W-W.org, 427-5566. The trainers are Katya Komisarek and Mike Esmailzadeh. Katya was involved in a direct action protest which resulted in the destruction of military satellite equipment many years ago. She and several others spent a couple of years in federal prison. During that time, she studied law, and after being released, she passed the bar exam and became a lawyer. She has defended Headwaters activists and the Cherry Pie 3, and me, as a matter of fact, in a wary housing Hounds Not Jails takeover back 2 3 years ago up in San Francisco. Most recently, she is the prosecuting attorney in a class action suit against the CIA for importing drugs into Los Angeles. Needless to say, Katya kicks ass. Mike E. is a martial arts instructor and founded the Sugetsuksan Dojo in Berkeley. This dojo is a worker collective. He also does an amazing amount of work in the activist community, working with the Long Haul Info Shop, the Slingshot Collective, and many others. In addition, he regularly serves as the police liaison in radical street processions and demonstrations such as Reclaiming May Day. Katya and Mike E. do a training that diverges somewhat from the traditional nonviolence training. In traditional trainings, you're likely to spend a good deal of time talking about what nonviolence is in philosophical terms. Katya and Mike E. take that time to do more of the role plays that really help activists develop the skills of nonviolent civil disobedience, not just the rhetoric. This makes it not only more useful, but also more engaging and enjoyable. You'll learn about the whole scope of the nonviolent civil disobedience process, from how to form affinity groups and planning for contingencies to courtroom solidarity tactics. In between, you'll gain skills in dealing with law enforcement pain compliance methods, handling a generally unsupportive media, dealing with difficult people or violent tendencies in a group setting, doing jail support, engaging in jail solidarity, and navigating through the legal system either to thwart it or to make it work despite itself. I've been to a shortened version of their training before. This is the fellow who writes this, who is Farmias, who writes this. And I guarantee that you will not regret it if you show up. It will be the best 8 hours you've spent in a long time. If you do nothing else to learn how to take control of your life and our collective destiny, come to this training. It's the most powerful way to build an effective instrument and the surest way to base our effectiveness on the power of our collective organization rather than depending on the crutch of violence to bring us immediate but short-term victories. I don't know about that. I don't know anybody who particularly uses violence in our community except for people in blue with badges and guns. But generally speaking, I think this is a great introduction to this nonviolence training that's happening on Tuesday. Again, that's Tuesday from 10 to 6 p.m., 125 Sunnyside, nonviolence training. And for more information, call 427-5565. Then on Wednesday, if you want to challenge the Downtown Association, that's the group that essentially runs the downtown and seems to have disproportionate influence on the city council and keeping homeless people in line. They were complaining about having a downtown park, you may remember, downtown. They didn't like that idea. They're having their meeting at 8:30 a.m. at 1347 Pacific Avenue. That's 1347 Pacific Avenue. It's across from the Downtown Coffee Roasting Company, for anybody who's interested in that. Finally, for those of you outside or living outside who have harassment tickets from the police, or have friends who have harassment tickets, or who have been troll busted, or who want to deal with sleeping tickets that are coming up, or want to make a complaint to the Citizens Police Review Board but are apprehensive about how to do it, there is an attorney who is willing to help you. He has volunteered time on this. His name is Anthony Bull, or Tony for short, Tony Bull, and his phone number is 429-9263, 429-9263. So, hey, there's lots of information for you, and if you missed some of it and you want to get some more specifics, please give a call to the off-air number for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, which is the number for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and that is at 423-HUF. And I'm hoping that we can get our poet friend to call in. Laura, if you're out there, now's the time to pick up the phone and give us a ringy-ding and see if we can... Ha! Could that be Laura? Well, let's just see, shall we?
Hi, Robert. It's Laura.
Hey, Laura.
So you've been doing some writing, huh?
Yeah, I've been writing since I was about 13. I'm 42 now.
Wow. Well, you better start now because I've only got half an hour left.
Okay. This one is called One of the Homeless. As you know, I was homeless with five children.
Uh-huh.
And I lived in a tent for 2 years in the foothills. I had it a lot easier than most people because there's a lot more places to hide from the law.
Wow. But you were hiding from the law.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's against the law to be homeless with children, don't you know?
And so you were worried about being able to retain custody of your kids?
Exactly.
Hmm. And this was all in what county?
El Dorado.
Wow.
Well, I survived 2.5 years, and with a lot of help from a lot of different people, we've now made it to Santa Cruz. We're working. We have a home. And my kids are going to good schools, and God blessed us all. And if people keep believing, keep hoping, and keep struggling, they will survive.
So what do you think of the Santa Cruz sleeping ban? Do you have any...
I think it's terrible. Of course you know that.
Well, I had to ask.
Yeah. People have the right to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, this one is called One of the Homeless. Mm-hmm. This is when I had to give my children to someone to take care of them because they wouldn't all fit in my little Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it's called One of the Homeless. Quickly, I whisper goodbye. I hurry off. I start to cry. I love them so much. I need their smiles, their touch. Without their happy laughter, my heart's ready to shatter. I need my children back, yet a home is what I lack. How did this happen to me? Please, dear Lord, don't let it be. Can you feel my anguish, my pain, as I cry in the cold, cold rain? I feel so utterly hopeless now that I'm one of the homeless. I want to scream in despair, oh God, do you even care? Desperately, I search for the way. I won't stop, come what may. To end this pain and misery, once again, to be a family. I have only one vision, to escape this prison. No longer one of the faceless, no more one of the homeless.
Very good. Give us another one.
All right. This one's called All Asking Why. I sit and watch countless people go by, so lost and forlorn, all asking why. Some are unsure, wondering how to cope. There are those who seem to have lost all hope. The numbers grow continually each day, searching for lost dreams of the American way. Living standards never seem to climb, knocked back down time after time. No homes, jobs, or pride for this country's outcast. How long will they suffer? How much longer will it last? Trying so hard just to keep carrying on before the dreams of America are all gone. I sit and watch countless people go by, so lost, so forlorn, and all asking why.
Bravo.
Those are the poems I chose to read today.
Hey. And have you published any of this stuff, Laura?
Not this, no. These haven't been published. I've won several awards, and I've been published in Easy Wind, Easy Writer, you know what I mean, Iser magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Georgetown Gazette, one of the homeless was in Georgetown Gazette.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these, poverty was in there too. I have one more poem, Poverty.
You want to read that?
Sure. Living this life of poverty is not where I want to be. Standing in this welfare line just messes with my mind. People put me down, make me feel like a clown. Life is my only legacy, hunger and strife. Please, Lord, deliver me from this life of poverty. Help me find a better way. Daily, this I pray.
What about another one?
That's about the only three I could find. I've got about, I don't know, 400 or 500 poems.
But your focus is somewhat different now that you're...
Actually, my focus is never changing. I see the pain, I see the anger, I see the hate. And that's for both sides. The anger and the hate for the people who have, the haves and the have-nots. Have, they're afraid because they may end up like this. That's the real problem. They turn their face because they're afraid that it can happen to them too, you know? And that fear is something everybody has to use to help build strength. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
You certainly have to fight the fear or acknowledge your own fear, I think.
Yeah, but you know what I'm trying to say. I think that's why people turn their heads.
Oh, because they're afraid that that's going to be them.
Yeah, they don't want to admit that it could happen to them too.
It's a form of, denial.
Yeah, don't even know I am lying, denial. Yeah. Anyways, I don't know. I made it. There's a lot more who've made it, and there's a lot more who can make it if they get a reaching hand, you know? It, That's all it took was someone to reach out and help us, you know, and we made it up here, and my husband's working good, I'm working good, and we don't have those fears anymore.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What kind of work are you guys doing now?
My husband's a carpenter, a union carpenter,
mm-hmm.
and I'm a cashier.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I do. In fact, that's where I met you. I met you as a cashier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is great. If you come up with any more poetry, I expect you to give me a call.
Of course I will.
Okay.
And thank you for letting me read my poetry.
Hey, thank you for letting us hear it.
You take care and God bless everyone.
Hey, thanks, Laura.
Bye-bye, babe.
Bye-bye. And that's Laura giving you some... Well, I guess both inspirational reality, you know, that you can come out of this, and also some sense of how things continue to be pretty grim for a lot of people. And hopefully the idea is to get together and find ways out of this, get together and find ways so that the people who are paying these outrageous rents don't fall into homelessness. What I'm going to do now is play a little music, and then we're going to run to Phil Bear for a Beach Flats update, and then we're going to be in the last half hour of the show, just about right now. You can still call in 427-3772, and you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Please stay with us and help make the show... your show.
I am a farmer, I've been wild my life. Call me a farmer, and not a farmer's wife. Children, and they are farmers too. Our crop and garden every year we grew. 200 acres is no easy haul, but it's a good life, no regrets at all. When Joe turned 50,
and that's Kristen Lenz, a farmer and not a farmer's wife. I'm cutting into the song because we're getting a long-distance call from San Jose, and we're talking to...
Daryl Williams.
Hi, Daryl. How you doing?
How you doing?
I'm good. And you're part of a movement in San Jose against, I guess, police misconduct and for accountability to citizens, right?
Yes. I'm the executive director of the Citizen Tribunal.
What is the Citizen Tribunal?
The Citizen Tribunal is made up of many community groups who come together to work together in compiling data that come in the form of complaints, in the form of information, or various information that can help determine patterns or conduct, whether it's in the courts, school districts, or...
I mean, do you, for example, look for racial profiling?
Racial profiling is one of the areas. In fact, I was in a discussion today. The San Jose Police Department has put it out that this profiling program that they're coming up with is something to be... receive rave reviews and so on, but believe that.
In fact, we heard, Daryl, from ACLU member Michelle Anderson, I'm not sure. She told us that this San Jose and San Diego are one of the only two jurisdictions in California that have begun such programs, but you're telling us that the program ain't so hot, huh?
No, the program is sold to those who are not familiar with how the police operate. It's an easy sell, but police officers still do not have to even write a report, let alone take data as to what ethnic background or ethnic group the person is from.
Let me clarify what this program is. As I understand it, there is a national push by the ACLU and other groups, NAACP, to at least compile statistics on how what the race or ethnicity of a person stopped by the police is. The point being that in some jurisdictions there is massive focusing on people simply because of their race, right? And the idea then is that if there are records, this will facilitate lawsuits in order to stop this. It will indicate, it'll put the police on notice that they better watch out because they're being watched, and they're stopping every third, you know, every second black person, but only every tenth white person, as they apparently do in these drug profile cases happening a lot with a lot of federal money flowing in. Then they have to be, you know, suddenly they're going to be drawn up short because the stats will be on board and it'll be hard to deny. Is that what that's about? Or?
Well, they may sell it that way, but if the data is not complete, there's no way to get a real clear picture.
And in San Jose?
What is that?
And in San Jose, you say it's not going to be complete?
Well, just once again, if the police officers stop someone and go through whatever they go through as far as, because I have a wide variety of reasons police have stopped individuals, but then there's no report filed, there's no any indication that it even took place, where does the data come from at that point? If the individual does not file a complaint himself, there is no recording of that incident.
Mm-hmm. Well, wasn't this going to be taken care of with the San Jose program? Or?
Well, out of, we were told, 120,000, an estimation of 120,000 stops a year in San Jose. And out of that, 40 to 60% of those do not get ticketed. But even in that group, there is a group above that number that we believe that do not go reported one way or another. We have incidents where individuals have been roughed up by the police, and it's all over, and it's gone. There's no report filed. There's no nothing. But one of the things that the public must always do is look at the fine print of every product sold to you. You must be able, willing to take the time to look at the small print.
Mm-hmm. So what are you seeking in terms of data collection? Are you seeking collection on every single, I mean, let's put it this way, what are you seeking and what are you offering that is inadequate in terms of what you're seeking? What are they offering?
Well, first of all, you have officers who have an MO about themselves. This is just what they do. Officers who it is their sole intention to be totally power struck when they're out there in the field. They have no intention of following processes, policies, or whatever mandated by the police department. And because these officers are never reprimanded, never disciplined, you always are going to have these officers doing the same thing. So thereby, in the course of a year's time, you're going to have incidents that take place that really show that there's a problem with certain performances out in the field and the at the demise of the citizens that these guys come across.
Mm-hmm.
And people must not allow the incident that they encounter with an officer to go unreported, unchallenged, getting names, badge numbers, and so on. The citizen that allow the officer to say, well, after he has roughed him up, beat him up, whatever, to say, oh, we made a mistake, we said and such, and then go away, and there's nothing. That is an area where the citizen must not be intimidated enough to where he does not step up and stand up and say, hey, this has happened to me, and you won't find a reported information of that until you press the issue.
So, in other words, are you saying that the San Jose police who are stopping people are not being told that they have to record the ethnicity of all stops, but only the ethnicity on tickets?
I'm saying that whether the Chief Lansdowne or anyone else is coming up with this policy is not foolproof by any means. The policy that they have put in place is one that I am, we've had dialogue in the past with the community groups, have had dialogue with the citizens, with the police brass in San Jose in 1992-93 area, where there are many officers, black officers, who spoke up in that meeting with other officers that there was indeed profiling. The Black Police Officers Association in San Jose.
By profiling, of course, you mean.
What is that?
By profiling, you mean discriminatory practices against
Absolutely.
Black people. Of course, the policy we're talking about to combat that is a policy whereby every single stop a police officer is required to note the ethnicity of the person
Absolutely.
He or she stops.
And every stop, not just the ones that they can't get out of, but every time they stop an individual for whatever reason, that is the area of having officers who are credible and professional. But because the exoneration rate has allowed these same guys to do their dirty stuff, then there is no fear to just do business as usual. Until that we get that type of monitoring process in place at every stop, every time that light goes on in a cop car, you pull a citizen over. There is some mechanism that allows it to be documented, and it's out of his control somehow. That is the only way you're going to really get credible data to go by.
Well, let me ask you this. In terms of the actual policy that's being proposed, are they proposing to document only stops where citations are given? Are they proposing to document, and again, we're talking agreed, documentation by the police officer, not by the citizen, but are they going to document every single stop regardless, and I know we're only talking about vehicles here, but every single vehicular stop, regardless of whether a ticket is issued or not, do you know what that policy is proposed to be?
Well, it is supposed to be every stop.
It is supposed to be every stop, and
the disparity is in why they were stopped. Those are the areas. Officers are stopping people, saying one thing, and then it leads to, well, do you have drugs, what gang are you affiliated with, a whole wide variety of questions after they got the car stopped.
And often abusive treatment of people endlessly, he'll put them on the ground in handcuffs for an hour. Search their cars illegally, have dogs sniffing around, and then think, get up and say, okay, you're free to go.
Yes.
And nationally, the stats we learned from ACLU attorney Michelle, and I think her last name is Anderson, I'm not sure, that was that only 2% of these stops yield any kind of illegal contraband.
We know that. We're very comfortable with the findings. The tactics that they're using and just the reasons that they're using to do this is what is outrageous. Definitely outrageous. And for any citizen to feel that certain people in the community are just crying or just complaining all the time, give a real account. No one wants to be roughed up and thrown on the ground. And what do you do when you go to internal affairs? It's an automatic exoneration. The citizen, the police auditor they have in San Jose, it was just a joke.
You're talking about the
policy that they have there. It's more like a position of a strong data collection ability. But in fact, it doesn't offer anything of credibility.
The auditor in San Jose is even weaker.